It's 1942 in Kalamazoo, Michigan, a small industrial city halfway between Detroit and Chicago. At the red brick factory of the Gibson Guitar Company, a guitarist named Les Paul is idly strumming on an electric guitar as a group of Gibson executives files into the conference room and take their seats. Paul is playing his prototype for a completely new kind of electric guitar. The execs, all middle-aged veterans of the business with thinning hair and gray suits, look very confused. Paul smiles to himself. He's confident he can win them over. Though he's only 26, the redhead from Wisconsin is already one of the most well-regarded electric guitarists in the country. He's been building and customizing his own guitar since he was a kid, and he's certain he's holding his best invention yet. The executives stare at the contraption sitting across Paul's lap. A 4x4 wooden post with guitar strings and a screwed-on neck.
What the heck is that thing?
I call it the log. It's a solid 4x4 piece of pine wood. With electricity, you don't need a hollow body for a sound chamber. All the sound comes from the vibration of the strings.
Paul plugs the log into a small amp and strums a few notes.
So, what do you think? Would Gibson like to license my design?
The executives look at each other, then back at Les Paul's log. They burst out laughing.
Mr. Paul, there's no way the Gibson Company will ever sell a guitar like that.
Why not? It looks like a broomstick with strings.
Paul leaves the Gibson factory, fuming. Okay, so the log's not so pretty. But the sound? Well, Paul thinks that is a thing of beauty. He tried to make it look more like a regular guitar, sawing an old acoustic guitar in half and attaching the two pieces to either side like wings. But there's no getting around that it looks like a bizarre contraption. Still, Paul knows. He's on to something. He's been struggling with electric guitars for years. If you turn them up too loud, they produce screeching feedback. Paul has a theory about that. The source of the feedback is the guitar's hollow body, so he built the log, and sure enough, no feedback. And a brighter, clearer tone. Paul returns home to Chicago, determined to make his odd-looking creation a success. Let those Gibson guys laugh. Sooner or later, they'll come around. Everyone will. What he doesn't know is that a few years later, he will meet a man who will share his vision. Leo Fender, owner of the Fender Electric Instrument Company. And this friendship will set the stage for the epic guitar battle between Gibson and Fender that will redefine the rock and roll era.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. We'll be right back. Sometimes choices are simple. There are Chevy people and there are Ford people. There are Mac people and PC people. Marvel and DC people. Harley people and Honda people. For those who draw the line, these aren't just brands or mere preferences. You are one or the other. Oh, you may flirt with the other side, but there's one you feel more a part of, like something tribal. I mention this because the story you're about to hear hits home for yours truly. And if you love music, I'm thinking this one might get personal for you too. Before we start, let me ask you a question. Think back to when you were a kid. Now, when I say the words rock and roll, what sound comes to mind? If you're thinking the electric guitar, is it something like the howling tremolo of Jimi Hendrix playing Purple Haze? Or more that chunky Jimmy Page riff launching Whole Lotta Love? Maybe it's Eric Clapton's sweet melodic solo in Derek and the Dominoes' classic rock masterpiece, Layla. Among many of us who play the electric guitar, or who try to, well, there was a song way back when that made you want to play in the first place. For me, it was the song All Right Now by the early 70s band Free. When I heard it, I wanted to do that. And to do that, you needed a guitar with that sound, that thick, creamy distortion. A guitar like the guy played on the record. The unmistakable sound of two high-output humbuckers like you find in a Gibson Les Paul. I couldn't afford it back then. I probably could have afforded a used Fender Stratocaster, but, well, a Fender has a different sound completely. Buddy Holly and Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan loved them. With those single-coil pickups, you get a chimey sound, and when you lean on the whammy bar, the notes can dive and soar right back like a jet fighter, or warble like a bird. You can't really do all that with a Gibson. For some, there's just nothing like that trebly twang that comes from a Fender Telecaster, or its sister, the Fender Strat. While for others, only a Gibson Les Paul or a Gibson SG will deliver that fat, heavy crunch of harmonic juiciness and sustain. Think Pete Townsend spinning his arm like a windmill, bashing out You Won't Get Fooled Again, letting each chord ring, ba-ram, zip, zip, you know. So, what's it going to be then? Are you more Gibson or Fender? They may say it's only rock and roll, but as you're about to hear, it's a whole lot more. It's a long-running battle that began when traditional music makers at Gibson went up against an irreverent Southern California electronics repairman named Fender, who broke all the rules and rewrote modern music as we know it. In this six-part series, we'll trace the rise and rivalry of Gibson and Fender, from tiny companies in Michigan and Southern California to global powerhouses that paved the way for the sale of nearly a million electric guitars a year in North America. Grab your earplugs, because this could get loud. This is Episode 1, Les and Leo. It's 1935. A 12-piece band plays the popular standards of the day at a New York City nightclub. A new style of music called jazz is all the rage. And old acoustic guitars can't compete with its blaring horns and strong backbeat. Electric guitars can. At least, that's the theory. Couples swing around the dance floor in their best evening attire. The men in black tuxedos, the women in lacy knee-length dresses and white satin gloves. The trumpet and clarinet players take their solos. When it's the electric guitar player's turn, he cranks up the volume on his small amplifier. The audience groans. The band stops, and the band leader rolls his eyes.
Turn that damn thing off!
No one's quite sure yet why electric guitars are so prone to feedback. It'll be another few years before guitarists like Les Paul realize that the source is the guitar's hollow body, which picks up vibrations from the guitar's amplifier and translates them into additional unwanted sound. Until then, electric guitarists have to be careful not to play too loud, or else that screeching sound will ruin their performance. Despite such drawbacks, electric guitars are still louder than their acoustic cousins, so they become ever more popular with jazz musicians, and one of the most popular brands is one of America's oldest guitar companies, Gibson. That's why in another 7 years, Les Paul will bring Gibson his Log. With his solid body design, he sees a solution for the feedback problems that have dogged early electric guitar models. But it should be no surprise when the company rejects it. Electric guitars aside, Gibson is a very traditional guitar manufacturer with a history dating back to the 1890s. That's when an artisan named Orville Gibson developed a reputation for making mandolins. It's 1902, and Orville is hard at work in his small shop in downtown Kalamazoo. His tiny workroom is stacked with old furniture. He strips fine walnut and maple from the furniture to make his hand-carved instruments. It takes Orville and his small staff of artisans weeks to build a single mandolin. A handful of local businessmen, dressed formally in dark suits and carefully knotted ties, step into the shop.
Afternoon, gentlemen. What can I help you with?
We've come to you with a business proposal, Mr. Gibson.
Orville ushers them into his office.
I'll get right to it, then. We'd like to buy your company. This is a great opportunity for everyone, given the high demand for your product, Mr. Gibson. We just need to increase your production capacity.
Orville's been poor all his life. An opportunity to sell his business is too good to resist. For $2,500, even in 1902, a modest sum, he hands over the Gibson brand. Gibson's new owners waste no time expanding their business. They hire more artisans and increase production. By 1906, Gibson is generating $40,000 in annual sales, over $1 million in today's dollars. As for Orville, he goes into early retirement. His namesake company sends him a small royalty check every month until his death in 1918. Even with Orville out of the picture, Gibson's commitment to quality remains high, as does its dedication to tradition. So it takes a while for Gibson to get on board with the electric guitar. In 1937, Gibson finally releases their first hollow-body electric model, the ES-150. They sell about 500 of them in the first year, relatively successful for a time when electric guitars are still seen as something of a novelty. The ES-150 is a hit with professional jazz musicians. Like all of Gibson's product, it's a handsome, finely crafted instrument. But even it isn't immune to feedback. By the early 1940s, Gibson has a much bigger problem than feedback-prone guitars. World War II brings lumber and metal shortages that force Gibson to slash production. To make up for the loss in sales, Gibson refashions the factory and trains workers to make parts for guns, airplanes, and radar systems. Still, Gibson is struggling financially. So in 1944, its owners sell the company to Chicago Musical Instruments, owned by an ambitious Russian-Jewish immigrant named M.H. Berlin. Berlin promises to get Gibson back to making guitars again, especially electric ones. Meanwhile, Les Paul, the man who tried and failed to sell Gibson on a solid-body electric guitar, is fast becoming one of the nation's best-known guitarists. After the war, he resettles in Los Angeles, where he finds plenty of work as a studio musician. Post-war L.A. is teeming with musicians and recording engineers who love Paul's guitar experiments and drive to create new instruments. Los Angeles, 1947. Just off Sunset Boulevard in the heart of Hollywood sits Les Paul's house, a small one-story bungalow with two slender palm trees growing in the front yard. Paul converted the house's tiny garage into a home studio, packing it with instruments and recording equipment. To soundproof it, he sealed the garage door shut, making it impossible to get in or out without climbing through a window. On a warm summer night, Paul hosts an informal jam session with a small group of friends. Word of Paul's garage studio has gotten around. It's a unique concept in 1947, and musicians and recording engineers from across the city drop in. During a break from jamming, they sit around drinking beer and arguing about gear.
Les, you seen the new Gibson catalog? Looks like they're starting to make some good guitars again.
Forget Gibson. I can build you a better guitar out of spare parts.
Just then, Paul sees someone new climbing through his studio window. He's a bit older, about 40, with glasses and thinning hair. He's dressed like a janitor, in a blue work shirt with a pocket protector. One of the musicians recognizes him.
Leo, come on in! Les, this here's Leo Fender. He's a sound wizard. There ain't but four decent PA systems in all of California, and he built three of them.
Glad to meet you, Leo. Can I get you a beer?
No thanks. I'm not much of a drinker, actually.
Compared to the loud, gregarious musicians, Fender is shy and socially awkward. He shuffles around the cramped garage, carefully studying Paul's homemade equipment. When he gets to Paul's guitar collection, his attention immediately gravitates toward the log. Paul jumps at the opportunity to brag about one of his inventions.
Oh, that's the world's first solid-body electric guitar. Want to take it for a spin?
I don't really play.
I'd like to hear you on it, though.
Paul plays a quick, jazzy lick on the guitar. Leo likes what he hears.
Very impressive, Mr. Paul. Please, call me Les.
It's getting past midnight, and the jam session is winding down. Paul chats with each musician as they pack up their gear. As the last player climbs out the window, Paul looks around and realizes that Fender is gone too. He slipped out without saying goodbye.
What a weird guy, Paul thinks. Doesn't seem like the type to hang out with musicians.
Until about a year ago, he wasn't. Fender got into music at first with a radio repair business. Word of his electronics knowledge got around, and local musicians began hiring him to fix their amplifiers and electric instruments. Fender became especially fascinated with his favorite instrument, the Hawaiian-style steel guitar. A Hawaiian steel guitar lays flat on the player's lap. Fender's electric Hawaiian steel guitar was custom ordered by the many Western swing bands playing honky-tonks in dance halls all over Southern California. But it never occurred to Fender to try building an electric Spanish-style guitar, the kind that hangs from a shoulder strap against the player's chest. Not until he saw Les Paul's log. Inside one of the two metal sheds that houses the Fender Electric Instrument Company, Fender approaches his lanky young assistant, George Fullerton, who is working on a steel guitar.
Hey, George, what would you say about building a Spanish-style guitar with a solid body?
A solid body? I don't know, Leo. I'm not sure how that would work.
I'm not sure either, but I've seen one in action, and I think we could figure this out.
Leo Fender is an unlikely candidate to spark a revolution in guitar design. He doesn't even play guitar. But his outsider's perspective gives him an advantage. Unlike tradition-bound guitar makers like Gibson, Fender has no preconceptions about how to make an electric guitar. He's starting from a clean slate. And Fender has another advantage, Les Paul's garage. Soon, he's a regular there, participating in many a late-night conversation with Paul and other guitar experts. For hours, they debate the technical challenges of building a truly great electric guitar. And eventually, someone rises to the challenge. But it's not Leo Fender or Les Paul. It's another guitar maker, a tall, white-haired motorcycle racer named Paul Bigsby. It's his custom guitar design that will inspire Fender's first solid body electric and set in motion a transformation of the guitar's role in popular music. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle.
And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
It's spring 1948, and Les Paul, Leo Fender, and Paul Bigsby are hanging out in Paul's garage. He's showing off his latest modified guitar when Bigsby casually drops a bombshell.
I just finished making my first solid body electric last week.
Well, Les Paul is intrigued, and more than a little jealous. He knows Bigsby is an excellent guitar maker. Did he come up with something that improved on the log? But he plays it cool.
No kidding. Well, bring it around next time. I'd love to play it.
I can. I sold it already.
Really? To whom?
Merle Travis. It was a custom design, just for him.
Leo Fender perks up at that name. Travis is one of the area's most popular country and western guitarists. Fender's rented PA systems to him on many occasions. The next chance he gets, Fender goes to a local honky-tonk to catch Travis performing, and sure enough, Travis walks out on stage with a strange-looking but beautiful new guitar with the name Bigsby inlaid onto the headstock.
How y'all doing tonight? I'd like to introduce y'all to my newfangled electric guitar.
As soon as Travis starts playing, Fender is transfixed. In Travis's nimble hands, the Bigsby guitar has both the mellow warmth of a hollow body electric and the bright, piercing tones of a Hawaiian steel guitar. And studying its shape and hardware, Fender realizes that all the sound is electrically generated. After Travis's set, the usually shy Fender can't contain himself. He approaches the guitarist and starts peppering him with questions.
How do you like that Bigsby guitar? What kind of wood is that? Is it a single or is that a double coil pickup there?
Slow down there, Leo. I don't know all the technical specs. I'll tell you what. You're so curious, why don't you just borrow it for a few days? I mean, you've loaned me your PA so many times, I reckon I owe you one.
Really?
Gee, thanks, Merle.
Fender can't get the Bigsby guitar back to his workshop fast enough. There, he and his assistant, George Fullerton, carefully examine every component.
This thing is a work of art, Leo. There's no way we can build anything this good, let alone mass produce it.
We don't have to. We just have to figure out the essential components that make it work. Then we can strip it down to its basics and come up with our own version.
Fender and Fullerton work together long into the night. The uninsulated metal shed is freezing at night and baking hot by the afternoon. There's no bathroom. When one of them needs a break, he has to walk down the block to the railway station. Finally, after a year of trial and error, they have their guitar. Compared to the elegantly carved one-of-a-kind Bigsby guitar, theirs is plain, utilitarian. A thin plank of wood covered in white enamel with a black pickguard and a neck held on by four large bolts. But the construction is sturdy. The materials are inexpensive. And its tone is clear and piercing, just like a Hawaiian steel guitar. As far as Fender's concerned, it ticks all the boxes.
I think it's time we tried this out in public, George. I think you're right, Leo.
In the fall of 1949, Fender and Fullerton take their prototype guitar to the Riverside Rancho, a popular honky-tonk up in Los Angeles. It's a Hollywood version of an old-timey frontier bar with wagon wheels hanging from the walls and saloon doors separating its different rooms. Local Western swing bands provide the entertainment. While the bands are on break, a guitar player approaches Fender and Fullerton.
I ain't never seen a guitar like that before. What do you call it?
It's a prototype. It doesn't really have a name yet.
Mind if I give it a try?
Sure.
For the band's next set, the guitarist plugs in the Fender prototype and begins to play. It sounds great. Bright and clear with a sharp tone that easily floats above the sound of all the other instruments. When the guitarist finishes his solo, the crowd lets out a cheer. Fullerton turns to his boss and pats him on the back.
Congratulations, Leo. I think we've got ourselves a hit.
Leo gives himself a few minutes to bask in the glow of their success, but his mind is churning. He knows that Paul Bigsby has made several more electric guitars like the one he made for Merle Travis. They're all custom jobs. Bigsby has no interest in mass-producing his product. But his clients are all well-known country and western musicians, and it's only a matter of time before other guitar companies, big companies, like Gibson, take notice of Bigsby's work. And when they do, they'll start copying his ideas. Fender's still a tiny company. There's no way it can compete with the big established brands. If Leo Fender wants his solid body electric guitar to be a success, he needs to figure out a way to ramp up his production capacity before Gibson and its rival guitar companies get in on the action. On the next episode, Gibson hires a new president to save it from financial turmoil, one with enough vision and know-how to give Leo Fender a run for his money.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I hope you enjoyed this episode. A quick note about the conversations you've been listening to. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Andy Herman wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Emily Frost and Donna Hyams edited this story. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman. Sound design by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louis, created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.